Good evening. I guess no one else knows how to set up the microphone, so if I can't be heard, somehow indicate me. I'll try to speak louder. I'd like to start by thanking Yehuda Myers and Omishkov for, in general, I think, keeping the Musar Shmuzin going on in the summer, and specifically for asking me to ask for giving this opportunity to speak to you tonight, and putting signs on the door. I couldn't find the shirt I was wearing in that picture, so I decided to go for the full suit look. A couple people had come to me earlier and said, hoping to give the Musar Shmuzin, you're finally going to say everything you always wanted to say from here. So I've actually stood in front of this podium before and spoken. Usually I'm making announcements on Shabbos. That's usually where I stand. That's usually where I'm more comfortable over here. But I haven't said, it's not like I have a ton of, pent-up frustration. Now I have to share it with everyone here. That's, not been my experience over the past couple of years. So if that's what you were hoping for, I apologize. Also, I saw someone scrawled on the sign, Rabbi of UPenn, which is my new title. Whoever did that. So I appreciate it. I'm really not here come to speak as the rabbi or anyone important. I'm speaking here as a member of this Beis Medrash, someone who, I know pretty much everyone here. I've known some of you for many years learning here, and that's, I'm really coming in that position, not from any position of chashivas or rabbanus or anything like that. So the 9 days begin next Monday, and Tisha B'Av is the following Tuesday. So we know that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. The first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed for three sins that the Jews committed. The three big sins. Shrichas Damim, Avodah Zarah, and Gil HaRayos. So if you stop and think for a second, what the percentage of the Jewish people that could have been committing these averos? If you just stop for a minute. Let's take Shrichas Damim being the most obvious example. If 50%, let's say, 51% of the Jewish people were committing Shrichas Damim, very quickly, you have each killed one person. You've just eliminated the Jewish population in half. So presumably, that's not exactly what was going on. Gerayos, likewise, we know from our Kedushin and elsewhere, which family's Yichus was completely messed up and which had been left alone. It doesn't seem that Ruba, the population, completely was committing Gerayos, destroying any sense of Yichus and anything else. I guess it's possible that Azar was being committed by that percentage, but since the Beis Hamikdash was still functioning, it seems a little bit unlikely, but I guess I can't say it's impossible. So what does it mean when Chazal say that it was these sins that destroyed the Beis Hamikdash? I think it was that these kind of sins were tolerated. Murder was tolerated. Gerayos and Azar were tolerated. That most of the people probably weren't doing these things, and they were going around their regular business, their day-to-day things, perhaps even doing mitzvahs, perhaps learning, perhaps doing everything else they were doing. But they let this kind of thing happen. Maybe it's not my responsibility. Someone else will take care of it. And I think that kind of culture led to everyone kind of going with the flow, and therefore when these three sins were going on, it was ignored, and therefore everyone was held responsible. I think you find this in a couple places in the Chumash as well. Back in Parshas Korach, right after Korach's rebellion fails, and the earth opens up and swallows Korach and his followers, shortly after it, Hashem threatens to destroy the entire Jewish people. It says to Moshe, separate yourself from this nation, I'm going to destroy them. And again, the question which the Farshim deal with, Korach was a couple people, a couple hundred people maybe, and most of them seem to have been destroyed already. Why is the entire people being held responsible? And again, if you think of the story, if you think of what's going on in that story, you have Korach and his Beidasso talking to Moshe, let's figure in the middle of the camp, and the other approximately 600,000 to a million Jews around them, and everyone's kind of watching and waiting. And again, waiting and saying, well, we'll see what happens. This is not exactly my concern. If Moshe wins, good. Moshe wins, Korach wins, also good. I'm not sure I really have to get involved in this. And again, I think that's why in that circumstance, in that story, the entire Jewish people were held responsible. Something coming up later in Sefer Devarim, I think we can see another illustration at some more halachic level. There's a mitzvah we know, it's machlokes, Rambam and others, but whether there's a mitzvah to appoint a king or not. The Rambam held very strongly that it was. probably Abarbanel most famously disagreed. And part of the Abarbanel's taina on the Rambam for counting a melech, he says, what do you need a melech for? The Abarbanel had somewhat of an anti-monarchy, perhaps from his experience working with the kings. He knew how bad they could be, bureaucracy. But he levels three times. He says, if you look at what are the three major responsibilities of a king? They're to fight wars, to set up a court, have a court system, and extra halachic, extrajudicial things. Those are kind of the three categories. You can sum up most of the responsibilities of the king into those categories. So the Barbanel says, well, you know what? Wars were fought way before we had a king. There's the mitzvah of Bezdin, courts is completely independent of a king, and Chazal can do certain extra halachic things. So what exactly does the melech serve? And I think an answer you could give to the Abarbanel is you can say, you're right, anyone could do those things, but it's the melech's responsibility to do those things. These aren't powers only he can do, but he's the one who's supposed to be doing it. And perhaps that's why, you know, when part of the Abarbanel's proof that there shouldn't be a mitzvah to appoint a king is you see Shmuel's negative reaction when the Jews ask for it. And part of that's because it was almost asking for a free responsibility. We don't want to have to be the ones who are responsible for taking care of these things anymore. Let someone else do it. We want to go about our day-to-day business, you know, keeping mitzvahs, learning Torah perhaps, but we don't want these other things to do. And therefore there had to be this king who was chayev to do those things. If you look in the Sefer HaChinuch on that mitzvah, he refers you back, for the Shrashe mitzvah, he refers you back to Mishpatim for the mitzvah of Shalol Kalas Anasi, not to curse the Nasi. And he says, human nature is such that if everyone's just, everyone's responsible for it, you have anarchy, and no one's really going to take care of it. He almost implies that having, you know, one, if everyone's a leader, a bad leader in some ways is better than no leader. Because human nature, unfortunately, is such that everyone kind of thinks, oh, someone else will do it. In psychology, you have this principle when, unfortunately, you know, when there's an emergency, someone's hurt, they say you should tell, all right, you call 911, you do this, you do that. Because everyone always assumes the other person's doing it, because everyone wants to go about their business, they don't want to be bothered. They want to be only bothered with this. And I think, again, you see this, I think there's a ideal in the Torah, when obviously the melech is, you know, we assume it is a mitzvah like the Rambam, but I think there's an ideal in the Torah that everyone's supposed to be involved on some level. There's no just sitting back and saying, I'm going to do my thing, and the tzibur will take care of itself. In certain cases, everyone's held responsible to do something. Something that struck me as I was reading this week's Parsha, when you have the mitzvah set up the Ir Miklat. Right, so we know when someone who kills accidentally, they have to go flee to the Ir Miklat. And Chazal pointed out, as we know, the Ir Miklat are the cities that belonged to, that were Levium lived in, Kam Levium lived in. And we know, and so Chazal say that, from going to those cities, he'll learn proper behavior. Nowhere is there a mitzvah anywhere that the Kam Levium have to, you know, take care of this guy and show him the proper way to live. I don't think you'll find any pasuk like that that implies that, their job is to, this guy, he's the mayor of the town, he's the one who has to influence this guy to good and show him where he did wrong, etc. I think the idea is, because everyone's responsible for that. The entire city, everyone's supposed to be a leader in their own way in taking care of this. There's no one person. Unlike by the Melech, where unfortunately we know that these war and these bigger things wouldn't be taken care of, when it comes to the interpersonal thing, the Torah expects, you know what? Everyone has to take care of this. Everyone's responsible for influencing this person for good. Shalom Karmi Shlita once wrote in an article that, organizations are not what accomplish things in this world, it's individuals. And if I can modify that a little bit, institutional leaders necessarily are not the ones who accomplish things. It's individual leaders. It's people in this base medrash, in any base medrash, going around and taking care of the things that need to be taken care of. People here in this base medrash right now, we're here in the summer. This is my third summer being here, and I know many people have been here a lot longer than me. That's more machazik to me and other people than anything else. It's the people who are here in mornings, or people who are here at nights who come and learn. And just that's the people who are leading this yeshiva. I don't think, obviously, there's a place a premium on a high-level Torah Lishma, and high-level learning and our Rebbeim and everything else, and obviously they're the center of this yeshiva. But what makes our yeshiva different, I think, and what makes our yeshiva and the people in this room make our yeshiva different is the people who go to there, who do everything else they do and then still come to the Beis Medrash. People who have classes in the morning or have jobs at other times, or even people who don't are always learning, but they're always learning here, and they're always helping other people as they learn, whether learning with them, giving shirim, that kind of thing. I think that's kind of what makes our yeshiva somewhat different than others. And I think, by the same token, we need to take a step back sometimes and think, okay, I'm learning, but am I actually looking out for this Beis Medrash, or am I just complaining about the flaws? Speaking about Sichas Musar, I remember a year or two ago when Gilad Shalit was released and we got him back, I remember a couple guys were grumbling, saying, oh, I'm sure no one in the yeshiva is talking about it. Why is no one in the yeshiva talking about it? And someone said to him, why don't you go over to the person who sang Sichas Musar this week and ask him to talk about it? And Kachava, the person went over him, and he spoke about it, and people, I think, got a lot out of it. But instead of just sitting and complaining to the side and saying, oh, why does no one talk about these issues? Instead of writing a letter to the commentator, instead of getting angry at issues, sometimes that's our thing, oh, I'll just complain about it and go about my day-to-day business. No, I think you have a certain responsibility. If you think there's a problem, then come up with a way to solve it. And I think that's often very lacking, perhaps in our yeshiva and the community in general. A couple people have said to me over the past couple days, since I was announced that I was leaving, people said to me, like, oh, how's the yeshiva going to survive? Which I guess was flattering, although not exactly, because I really want the yeshiva to survive even though I'm not here. But even further than that, first, the yeshiva has survived way before I was here. I've not been here that long. There are people in this room who've been here a lot longer and have done a lot more for the yeshiva. If anything, I've just added to the levels, layers of bureaucracy that exist here. Which I've tried, hopefully we can all try to change. But also, who's going to keep the yeshiva going? Every person in this room will help us keep the yeshiva going. That's the answer. Someone who's taking my job. I don't know who's taking my job, but in terms of what I've done, what I do for the Gabbais and what many of us do, everyone should feel responsible. It's not just the one person who has an official title. That's not the person who's chayev to do it. People should feel a sense of achrayus to take care of things. I think many people don't realize what it takes to make a lot of day-to-day yeshiva happening. And if you're looking for things to do, there are definitely people who can point you in the right direction, who can really explain to you what makes this yeshiva work. And I think that's a lesson that we all really need to take. And I hope that there's one thing that people will continue to do and do more after I leave, it's to feel that achrayas to yeshiva and feel that achrayas to Jewish community. The leadership on that level has nothing to do with leading a group of people behind you. It's being there at the minyanim, it's being chazan when there needs to be a chazan, plug for the gabayos. It's taking care of other things that need to go on in the yeshiva, and when you see a flaw and find a way to fix it, not just complaining about it, not adding to the culture of cynicism that sometimes exists here, not just saying, all right, well, I'm going to do my thing, and somehow it'll work itself out, and I'll just complain about it over lunch or over dinner or whatever. So, my bracha to the yeshiva, I try not to go over the time limit. My bracha to the yeshiva is that Emir Teshema should continue to flourish, and it should continue to get better and better as it has every year. This yeshiva becomes a better place. And I hope that people will take on themselves, whether it be helping the yeshiva, or be helping other people, helping them learn, helping them grow. And I hope to stay in touch with all of you, and wish everyone much hatzlacha.